All right, bear with me. I'm not as good as Ron, so I'll be reading a little bit here, but I'm going to try to keep my head up. So I'm Chris, longtime listener, first-time caller. I hope I don't embarrass my lovely mom over here, because I'm going to get a little personal. At some point over the transition from childhood to adulthood, I came down with a wicked case of clinical depression. When the faith instilled by me in me from a very young age by my wonderful family was challenged, that small seed of faith did not take to the soil. Reading the Bible at that time was strenuous exercise, and I was out of shape. I was also so mad about my situation that I started resenting the church. Somehow, in the midst of all this aversion to the Word, I was able to open up my Bible and find Ecclesiastes. And from the wisest man of all time, I found a rare bit of contentment in the knowledge that it's all meaningless. Negative thinking, the problems that invade our consciousness, almost every little thing we care about on this earth is vanity. It all starts as raw material for our time and ends up as raw material for the next generation. Unless we do something of historical significance, which in and of itself is vanity, we will die and will be forgotten in the future. We all know this, and we shouldn't avoid confronting the fact. There is peace in accepting this. Of course, as Christians, we know that we could die tonight and tomorrow we'd wake up in heaven. So, as great as this time God has blessed us with to roam this beautiful earth he made for us, we should welcome our earthly expiration with joy. Most of you know that a few years ago, I discovered I had stage 4 cancer in my head. But battling that brain tumor, I always knew that it had no way to defeat me. Either I kill it and level up under the what doesn't kill you makes you stronger policy, or it kills me and I go to the promised land. Sounds like a win-win situation. Enough about me, though. Before I dive into his work, let me take a few moments to biographize my favorite author in the Bible, King Solomon. Solomon was the fourth monarch of the United Kingdom of Israel and Judah. He was David's son and his successor to the throne. Solomon reigned from 970 to 931 BC. That was such a long time ago that they actually counted time backwards. So everything Solomon wrote came from the wisdom granted to him by God and his incredibly extensive life experience. In a dream, God asked what he could do for Solomon, and Solomon asked for understanding that could discern between good and evil. That's interesting to me, given the fall of man from Genesis chapter 3, which came from eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. But that does come in handy for a new job as the king of all Israel. Since God liked Solomon's humility in asking for something so innocent, he bestowed upon Solomon riches unsurpassed by any other king in the history of the world. So I don't know what the inflation rate is over 3,000 years here, but I assume our tech billionaires haven't even reached Solomon's level of wealth. Over the course of one night, one dream, Solomon became the wisest and richest man on the planet. First Kings is where his story unfolds. In chapter 3, verse 3, "And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except that he sacrificed and burned incense at the high places. Now the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings at that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord asked to Solomon in a dream. He said, 'Ask, what shall I give you?' And Solomon said, 'You have shown great mercy to your servant, David, my father, because he walked with you in truth and righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant, i.e. Solomon, king instead of my father David. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? The speech pleased the Lord, that Solomon asked for this thing. Then God said to him, because you have asked this thing, and have not asked for long life, nor have you asked for riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after. And I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. So if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. So Solomon's heart started in the right place, but went afoul later in his life when he succumbed to earthly temptations. Flip forward to chapter 11, we find King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter: Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely, as David his father had done. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives, who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their gods. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. So the Lord said to Solomon, since this is your attitude, and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees, which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates. Nevertheless, for the sake of David your father, I will not do it during your lifetime. I will tear it out of the hand of your son. Yet I will not tear the whole kingdom from him, but will give him one tribe for the sake of David my servant and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. So Solomon had supreme wisdom from God, and he led an incredibly extravagant and chaotic life. That's the kind of author I like to read. Solomon is attributed with writing two of my personal favorite books in the Bible, personal: Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. He also wrote the Song of Songs, a.k.a. the Song of Solomon. Not the biggest fan, but along with Psalms, largely written by his father, Proverbs is one of the greatest pick-a-random-line books in the Bible, because you can open it up to any part and find something profound. So is Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is the book that truly connected me to the Bible. Talked about it earlier, but after half a decade of negative thinking and backsliding from the faith of my family, I discovered Ecclesiastes. And for the first time in my life, the Bible was truly speaking to me. It can read like pessimism, but anyone who has lived through a good chunk of time in our world knows that it's realism. It's a straightforward account of what is good, what is bad, what we should do, and what we shouldn't do. I would just stand up here and read the whole book, but we don't have that kind of time. So let me dive right into it. After one verse identifying the author as David's son, we dive into it. Meaningless. Meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets, and it hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. I don't know about you, but I always need to keep that at the front of my mind. No matter what you're struggling with in this life, it's not new. It's not that big of a deal. What's important is that we devote our hearts to God and His Word. Everything else is like chasing after the wind. You're never going to catch it. Now, since our religion is distinguished by God's New Testament, I wanted to dive in a little bit to tie this up with some quotes from the Apostle Paul, giving us simple instructions on how to live our best lives in Colossians. Chapter 3, verse 3. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who appears in our life, then you will also appear with Him in glory. So let's set our minds on things above as we stand and sing.